Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
French.
All right, let's get everybody in.
Rich, let me give you a tip. Or let me give you my opinion.
Okay.
The problem with Christmas music is we've all heard those songs so many times. So many times. That after about a week or two of hearing them again, I don't know. My opinion is, I don't know. I'm not going to become a Grinch. You're as charming as an ear,
Mr. Grinch. I mean, I'm just saying. Mr. Grinch. All right. The timing of that, as well as Rob Kirkman talking about how he doesn't like Christmas music, is just really funny.
It was well
a book, he said.
Yeah. Was it bad? Did it not come over?
To be fair, Rich did ask everybody that is just joining right now. Rich did ask to play the Grinch in homage of like 2023's Mortgage, not in reference to Rob Christman's comments of Christmas music and him not liking it.
It was just coincidental.
Yep. But that was really funny, the timing of all of it. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, I'll go ahead and kick us off. Happy Friday, everybody. We're really excited to have a very special rundown today with a little bit of a 12 Days of TMC theme. Happy Hanukkah for those of you that celebrate as well, and happy holidays. We wanted to take a few moments to just talk about 12 Days of TMC. That is our virtual conference that we do this time of year. We have a solution sprint going on right now. And for those that have not heard me talk about that in the past, we are tackling some of the industry's biggest challenges in a competition format for our lenders to help to solve some of these issues. And so we have a panel of judges next Friday that is actually going to be judging these solutions. And so next Friday's rundown is going to be super special because we're actually going to announce the winners of the solution sprint and talk about the solutions that they came up with. So really excited about what we can review with you guys next week, but just know it'll be a little bit of a different format than we normally do for the rundown. Okay, so I'll get us really started. I'm Melissa Langdown, the President and COO of the Mortgage Collaborative, as always joined by the brilliant Rob Christman. And this week, we have a very special sponsor and guest, Rich Kugler with Stewart Lender Services. You are the SVP and the Director of Client Services at Stewart Lender Services, right, Rich?
Yes, that's right, Melissa. And thanks very much for having me. And it's a pleasure to be here with you and Rob to finish out the week in a strong and upbeat way, despite the start with the Grinch music. So happy to be here today.
Yeah, that might not have been probably the best homage to positivity in the rundown today, but it was really quite entertaining to listen to, at least. For those of you that came in late, you got to go back and listen on YouTube to the first few minutes of us kicking this off just to get a really good context for what we're talking about. If you don't subscribe to us on podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast or to YouTube, please do. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and get things really going. Obviously, Rich, Stewart Lender Services is a lot more than title, which a lot of people kind of think of Stewart first in the title space. Do you want to take just a brief moment and tell us a little bit about Stewart?
Certainly will. Yeah, thanks. So Stewart, as most people know, Stewart is first and foremost a 130-year-old title company. We've celebrated the 130th anniversary this year. Humble beginnings in the Houston area in Texas, but over the past few years, we've really expanded into a lot more. And the intent of that is twofold. One is We want to be positioned well with our lender clients and our servicing clients and partners in the industry to be really the premier services partner. So we want to be able to provide value in our relationships with those clients and business partners and offer services that matter and services that help to close more loans, help to improve the customer experience. And in addition to title and settlement services that we're known for, Stewart also has a very strong appraisal management company, Stewart Valuation Intelligence. That organization is a national appraisal management company specializing in mortgage origination and home equity origination, as well as servicing different valuations, both approved by both of the GSEs for their appraisal modernization efforts, and spending a lot of time in that area as well. And then in terms of other services, we really started to build out the value chain from the time of lead generation through processing, underwriting, and through closing and post-closing to have a number of different services throughout the entire spot. So starting with some credit and verifications, a couple of technology platforms, obviously our core title. And then for closing, we've added Notary Cam, which is a component of our remote choice closing. So with Stewart, you can close anywhere you or your client wants to close. And again, I'd just like to say that think of us as more than title.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Rich. I appreciate it. Well, Rob, I thought it would be kind of fun to kick off things with just talking about what's happening in the market. I mean, obviously, we've had a little bit of rate relief in the last several weeks. We've had a couple of things come out that applications are starting to pick up. Do you want to tell everybody kind of what's going on? And then, Rich, I'd love your input on if you're seeing a pickup on your side too.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I am where I am right now, is the market. But the rates have come down over the last few weeks, and it's nice to see. It appears that the bond market is, in effect, doing the Fed's work. The Fed raised rates. We've been at these levels for a while in terms of overnight Fed funds. But the bond market hitting a peak in terms of interest rates and yields and so forth in late October, we've kind of been grinding lower since then. It's nice to see. We have seen that reflected in the application data. And the fact of the matter is, if inflation continues to come down a little bit by little bit by little bit, and employment still continues to be strong, like the numbers that we saw this morning, and retail sales continue to be good, the consumer continues to be somewhat optimistic, there's continued talk about a soft landing, and that's nice to hear. And of course, I always find fault with analogies like that, because if you think about a soft landing generally applies to a plane and it comes to a halt. And of course, the economy never comes to a halt. So fact of the matter is, rates have come down because inflation has been coming down and the economy does not appear to be entering any kind of recession. And so things are actually pretty good right now. The things are firing on all cylinders and inflation is coming down. So the Federal Reserve is thought to be going to be delaying any kind of rate increase. And certainly talk has entered the markets in terms of a rate decrease or two sometime next year. So pretty good news all the way around.
Yeah, I agree. Rich, are you seeing the same thing from a title perspective, knowing that's kind of the core service for you guys, or requests coming in at a higher rate? What are you hearing from your lenders?
We definitely are. We're seeing that rate environment, and again, the decrease in rates has helped in terms of opening orders. And that's one of the metrics that we track is order opens and then ultimately order closes. But the opens have increased a little bit, even despite the seasonality, as you hit this time of year, it typically starts to tail off somewhat. But I think there is, to Rob's point, some optimism. Consumer spending continues to be high. And I think that's helping to fuel some of the applications that we're seeing to come in.
That's great. Rob, you started to say where you were, but you didn't actually tell everybody where you were. Where the heck are you? Are you in a barn?
I am. Well, first of all, did you know I can read Chinese, Melissa?
I had no idea.
I can read Mandarin. Did you know that?
I didn't. So
for example,
like the letters.
Oh, the letters. Letters.
Okay.
For example, if we go over here, this says shrimp.
You see that?
Shrimp. This, I have a little bit of try. It either says fish or fishing, one of the two. I'm in a shrimp barn. So I'll give you a little tour here. The Chinese community a shrimp processing plant here on the shores of San Francisco Bay in the 1880s and had a village with general store and bar shops and so forth in the 1880s and exported dried shrimp to China and to other parts of the United States. It has since died out, but the state of California has made a state park out of this and, subtly named China Camp State Park. But it's a very interesting place. It's one of those places where all the school kids come, like in third grade or fourth grade, field trip to China Camp. But it shows the fact that this is still here and emblematic of, a great industry that once thrived. I thought it would be interesting to contrast that versus some of the industries that we've seen, like lamp lighters or typewriter ribbon salespeople and so on, almost travel agents. But you compare that to the mortgage industry and the title industry, and we have a continuity and we continue to be very strong and very much a part of the economy. And things come and go and roadblocks get put in our way in terms of Dodd-Frank and the CFPB and TRID and new 1003 and so forth, and different rumors spring up in our industry like, oh my gosh, Amazon is going to get into the industry and wipe us all out, which of course didn't happen. But one of the things that came up a couple of years ago, and I wanted to ask Rich about this, is when I talked to lenders around the nation about certain things that they're seeing and certain things that impact their business. One of the things that came up for lenders a couple of years ago, everybody was kind of watching blockchain and talking about blockchain and how it might impact the title industry and how it might impact the lending industry. And we don't hear so much about blockchain anymore. And Rich, I wanted to ask you, like, what, from a lender's perspective, kind of what happened there and why aren't we all talking about blockchain still?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question, because I think it shares a similar path to a number of other technology initiatives that, initially you mentioned Amazon and automation in the shrimping industry and those kinds of things. But there are definitely a number of cases that we've had over the years where something's going to come and that's going to be the big disruptor. And there was a thought around blockchain being in that spot as well. A couple things that have caused it to be somewhat delayed. If you think about one of the key initiatives, and from a title perspective, one of the key advantages of blockchain was going to be to be able to have a verified source of truth early on in the process, so you don't have to go back 60 years or back to the time when the property was transacted previously. You'd have that information there at a process that would be verified and consistent. The challenge is that we've got 3,200 some odd jurisdictions around the country with counties, municipalities. All of those are independent. They're fragmented sources of data, really at the county level. Somewhat dependent on Tom and Mary Sue at the window, different ways to track vesting, judgments, tax information. So putting all that together on a technology tool like the blockchain has just been a real difficult initiative to do it. You can kind of think about, I think it's similar to e-closing, right? And I've been the guy that's been talking about about e-closing at the TMC, and it's going to happen someday. It's going to be there. But it's like the prince that was promised that it just takes forever to come out into the fore. It is eventually going to get there. And we have seen some use cases that have been successful, really around the investor space is one area in particular where investors have been able to replace their fancy spreadsheets and try to manage real estate assets a little bit better. Things like, kind of niche offerings like the bulk portfolios, fractional ownership, different things like that, where they have some limited data inputs, but have the ability to really have that verification of the process going forward. Another thing that's kind of caused some issue is that in some cases, it's been conflated with crypto. And then that becomes a risk question about, okay, what are we going to do now with the crypto situation versus blockchain. But at the same time, I think you see a number of lenders and technology platforms that are trying to incorporate some type of blockchain. And I know from our standpoint in the title industry as Stuart and another of other major underwriters, you might think of that, quote unquote, formal blockchain versus the automation. And there's a lot of work and a lot of investment going on right now in places where we can automate our data gathering, automate our process controls, and really try to develop the process more in more technology-based process without having to rely fully on blockchain. But it's coming, but it's not coming imminently anytime soon.
Yeah, you bring up a great point with regard to e-closing. And when I talk to folks about, I'm not half or a quarter as technologically advanced as say Melissa is, but when I talk to lenders and you say e-closing makes all the sense in the world, why aren't we doing it? And they say, well, we have the technology, but we do business in 158 counties, and only 30 of them will take anything close to what we can do as a company.
Right.
So, are you seeing that everywhere as well?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we've seen the adoption, and it's interesting because the adoption's been really mixed. It's been a lot lower than we had anticipated. But I think your point is exactly right on. Again, think of the national variance in county level, state level, even investors. So there are a lot of touch points that have made that a much more difficult process. And you, it's really hard for a lender to be able to justify multiple lanes for the same process, to have one automated, one e-close, one hybrid, one traditional. So where we found for clients that have been successful in that, they've really leveraged the ability to identify early the eligibility for RON or for e-closing, and then offer their clients or their customers rather the ability to use RON if they want to, or as maybe the preferred path. And then if there are alternatives, they have to be able to have a runway off of that at the same time without having to do things in parallel, because it just didn't make cost sense to do it. But RON ultimately is really going to be the type of solution that reduces a lot of the post-closing expense and helps for better execution. So you remove some of that manual work in the post-close review, in the let's stuff everything into an envelope, put it on a FedEx truck, all those kinds of things go away. And eventually that'll be a much more efficient process.
It almost seems like, and maybe they do, I've never been to, say, a conference where cities are, or counties are, or municipalities are, but it almost seems like instead of having a booth at a mortgage conference, some companies would be better off having a booth at some kind of county conference, where they can show these counties what these counties can do in terms of functionality and saving money and time and being more accurate and so forth. And educating some of these geographic locations who are lagging.
Well, so there's layers to that though, right? They have to have enough support from their Secretary of State. They have to have enough kind of support and infrastructure in their notaries and what's acceptable there. Then they have to have enough tax base in the counties to make all that come together, right? So There's so many layers that go into it that I'm like Rich, I'm hopeful that we're going to get to the point where this is widespread. And I know a lot of lenders are doing hybrid closings and, you know, at least e-notes and those sort of things to kind of help with operational efficiencies and kind of that quality component you were talking about, Rich. Mm-hmm. But I think there's so much more that we can do over time and would love to see us get there. We just have to.
Yeah, John makes the point, small, you know, counties don't want to lose jobs.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. They also don't have the funds to make the investment in some cases as well, to, you know, digitize and automate the things that we would all take for granted. Some of those older records, for example, and then installing those processes and controls take money as well.
Yeah. Well, and he also makes a point. I mean, you know, e-notes have their own challenges too with, you know, ensuring that your warehouse lines, your investors, mm-hmm. you know, there's all those layers in the chain or that's acceptable. And if you're, you know, not necessarily just going to Fannie and Freddie, or if you're doing FHLB or, you know, other things, there's just, there's layers in that world too. So that he makes a great point. It's not necessarily just kind of counties and cities, but also, you know, all the layers that go into even that next phase of just having the e-note and hybrid.
So I need to switch gears a little bit or a lot. Rich, in your introduction, you mentioned valuing servicing and being involved in the servicing market. Now, this year, 2023, many companies have realized the value of their servicing and had to sell all or a portion of their servicing off to larger holders like Mr. Cooper or, you know, whoever. But how do you get involved in servicing? How do you end up interacting with lenders in terms of servicing valuation or servicing packages and so on?
It's really from a workflow perspective. So so rather than actually doing the valuations of the servicing or the MSRs, we really find ourselves in the fulfillment chain in providing, I guess one would be, you know, appraisal and evaluation services for whether it's broker price opinions or some hybrid desktops or even some appraisal services as servicers look to mark to market or go through the default process. And then from a title and closing perspective, it's very much a process where, depending on the disposition strategy, we would be in the middle of that process supporting the pre-foreclosure, REO, any of those transactions that happen, and working with our offices across the country, as well as our network of agents and attorneys that support some of that business.
Interesting. I need to ask you something way off track. Melissa's like, oh my God, where's Rob going with this?
You just go with it, Rob.
Rich.
I knew it was coming.
We're used to it.
What? This will fall. Sure. This is going to fall flat on its face right here. Right. You're going to see me flail. Rich, every once in a while, a joke. There aren't too many jokes involving the title industry, right? But every once in a while, some story circulates, and I think the property was in Louisiana or New Orleans or something, where they come up with a title report and the title company or somebody says, this isn't good enough. And then they trace the title back through the Louisiana purchase all the way to whatever. Have you ever seen that story?
I have not seen that one. I was waiting for, is this a shameless plug for the movie Napoleon?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. I will put that story in my commentary next week.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying there are some cases like that though that trace their roots all the way back, and it's pretty crazy that you can actually have that tracking all the way back and get to that point.
I will find it. I'll put it Monday.
All right. Everybody, be on
I'm
the lookout.
Shoot for Monday.
For Rob's commentary on Monday, we'll get a chance to understand the whole story.
I'm going to make a note of it. Sorry. Go on.
All right. So
I don't make a note of things. I forget them.
Can I take us a different direction too, Rich? Are you okay with like getting, you know, blindsided by Rob and me all in an afternoon? All right, good. So obviously, you know, there's been a lot of kind of watching of interest rates and whether any of rates going up would really cause delinquencies to, you know, to increase in the industry or not. You know, there was just something that came out that looked at kind of delinquencies by rate and delinquencies by disaster. And since we were just talking about Louisiana, I thought it'd be fantastic to look at, you know, really that what they ended up finding out is, you know, these rate rising in interest rates, really probably because equity is as high as it is right now, but hasn't really affected delinquency rates at all. Mm-hmm. What really has affected delinquency rates, though, is disasters. So talk to us a little bit about, because, you know, when a home is completely flooded, a hurricane comes through, you know, the homeowner kind of walks away from it. Like the title process, the process of ensuring that, you know, all of that is kind of cleaned up, either if the home is, you know, marketed later on down the road or whatever the case may be. I'm just curious how you guys navigate that process and what you think about from a title perspective with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because the if you think of the severity issue of those defaults and kind of disasters or really point situations that would drive a homeowner or a number of homeowners in an area particularly to some stage of default, that makes for a much more difficult conversation and a much more difficult decision for them, and then also the issue for the servicer in being able to predict, you know, what's that impact on the portfolio and what's going to happen in disposing of that asset. From a title perspective, the title insurance is totally different than a hazard insurance or like a flood or those kinds of things. So it really doesn't apply as much in that role. But really where we see the interaction in those cases is really in kind of the, you know, supporting the process and facilitating the process with either attorneys on the ground in the states that require that, or with some of our you know, network of agents out in the field to help facilitate the process with the servicers. So I read that as well. It was pretty interesting to think about what some of those watershed events are that really cause the issues. And this is kind of a weird situation, you know, now with rates where they are, but employment one way, and then there's a number of other factors that I would say are probably not as, and I'm not the economist by any means. I mean, I'm wearing a Grinch tie, so I can't be that guy. But the impact of a number of different economic factors are different than they have been in the past, for sure.
Rob, are you laughing that I just totally took us a different direction off script? I never do that.
Not at all. I'm glad I didn't wear my Grinch tie today. It looked funny.
All right, we got time for one more question. Rob, do you want to take it?
So all day long, Rich, I hear economic forecast. People smarter than me, not as smart as me, which, you know, that's a low bar, but making interest rate predictions. If you had to make predictions about the title industry or about where Stewart Title, what you would be doing like a year from now, mm-hmm. What topics, you know, let's say we have you back on the show. What topics would we be talking about a year from now? What can people on this call expect? What are you predicting in terms of developments in the industry over the next year?
Well, I think for us, I would imagine it's kind of similar for others. I mean, the intent is to try to continue to drive efficiency in the process, that's really an important area for our lender clients. What we've heard from originators is that they are really trying to leverage digital tools. They're trying to leverage automation, minimize paperwork, and get better communication. So we're making a ton of investments all about improving the process to get better, more effective use of the technology tools that are there to allow our lender customers to be really to help their borrowers throughout the process all the way through. So if I look at like next year, I want to be able to say that we've helped our lender clients to have a better consumer experience, to better leverage digital workflows, to really position themselves as a differentiator in the market. There was a JD Power study recently that said that the feeling is that the consumer experience is becoming much more commoditized. So if you're a lender, how do you differentiate? Well, we feel that it's by being a trusted advisor. It's by providing an experience and communication and offering the ability to self-service, but still having the experienced representatives to support your business as a loan officer. And then we know we have to do the same thing for those loan officers as a partner.
I love it.
All right. Good answer.
Yeah, great answer. Rich, thank you so much for joining us today. Rob, thanks for joining as always. Really appreciate Rich your support and the Mortgage Collaborative and for sharing your expertise with us today. And as everybody knows, we're going to do a very special rundown next week. So make sure to tune in, hear about our solution sprint and all of the things that those teams come up with. And I look forward to seeing everybody next week. In the meantime, everybody have a good weekend.
That's a joke on Monday.
As funny as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
That's a capital market song.
You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.